The next LOS requires us to describe how cash flows of fixed income securities are structured. A typical bond has a bullet structure. Periodic interest payments or coupon payments are made over the life of the bond, and the principal value is paid with the final interest payment at maturity. The interest payments are referred to as the bond's coupons. When the final payment includes a lump sum in addition to the final period's interest, it is referred to as a balloon payment. Consider a $1,000 face value 5-year bond with an annual coupon rate of 5%. With a bullet structure, the bond's promised payments at the end of each year would be $50 in years 1 to 4 and $1,050 in year 5. A loan structure in which the periodic payments include both interest and some repayment of principal is called an amortizing loan. If a bond or loan is fully amortizing, the principal is fully paid off when the last periodic payment is made. Typically, automobile loans and home loans are fully amortizing loans. If the 5-year 5% bond we just described had a fully amortizing structure rather than a bullet structure, each of the 5 yearly payments would be $230.97, with the final payment adjusted slightly for rounding. Principal remaining would decrease by a larger amount each year until it reached zero in year 5. A bond can also be structured to be partially amortizing so that there is a balloon payment at bond maturity, just as with a bullet structure. However, unlike a bullet structure, the final payment includes just the remaining unamortized principal amount rather than the full principal amount. Sinking fund provisions provide for the repayment of principal through a series of payments over the life of the issue. For example, a 20-year issue with a face amount of $300 million may require that the issuer retire $20 million of the principal every year beginning in the 6th year. Details of sinking fund provisions vary. There may be a period during which no sinking fund redemptions are made. The amount of bonds redeemed according to the sinking fund provision could decline each year or increase each year. Some bond indentures allow the company to redeem twice the amount required by the sinking fund provision, which is called a doubling option or an accelerated sinking fund. The price at which bonds are redeemed under a sinking fund provision is typically par, but can be different from par. If the market price is less than the sinking fund redemption price, the issuer can satisfy the sinking fund provision by buying bonds in the open market with a par value equal to the amount of bonds that must be redeemed. This would be the case if interest rates had risen since issuance so that the bonds were trading below the sinking fund redemption price. Sinking fund provisions offer both advantages and disadvantages to bond holders. On the plus side, bonds with a sinking fund provision have less credit risk because the periodic redemptions reduce the total amount of principal to be repaid at maturity. The presence of a sinking fund, however, can be a disadvantage to bond holders when interest rates fall. This disadvantage to bondholders can be seen by considering the case where interest rates have fallen since bond issuance, so the bonds are trading at a price above the sinking fund redemption price. In this case, the bond trustee will select outstanding bonds for redemption randomly. A bondholder would suffer a loss if her bonds were selected to be redeemed at a price below the current market price. This means the bonds have more reinvestment risk because bondholders who have their bonds redeemed can only reinvest the funds at the new lower yield, assuming they buy bonds of similar risk. There are several coupon structures besides a fixed coupon structure, and we summarize the most important ones here. Some bonds pay periodic interest that depends on a current market rate of interest. These bonds are called floating rate notes, or FRNs, which are sometimes referred to as floaters. The market rate of interest is called the reference rate, and an FRN promises to pay the reference rate plus some interest margin. This added margin is typically expressed in basis points, which are hundredths of a percent. A 120 basis point margin is equivalent to 1.2%. As an example, consider a floating rate note that pays the London Interbank Offer Rate, or LIBOR, plus a margin of 0.75%, or 75 basis points annually. If one-year LIBOR is 2.3% at the beginning of the year, the bond will pay 2.3% plus 0.75%, which equals 3.05% of its par value at the end of the year. The new one-year rate at that time will determine the rate of interest paid at the end of the next year. Most floaters pay quarterly and are based on a quarterly or 90-day reference rate. A variable rate note is one for which the margin above the reference rate is not fixed. A floating rate note may have a cap, which benefits the issuer by placing a limit on how high the coupon rate can rise. Often FRNs with caps also have a floor, which benefits the bondholder by placing a minimum on the coupon rate, regardless of how low the reference rate falls. An inverse floater has a coupon rate that increases when the reference rate decreases and decreases when the reference rate increases. Step-up coupon bonds are structured so that the coupon rate increases over time according to a predetermined schedule. Typically, step-up coupon bonds have a call feature that allows the firm to redeem the bond issue at a set price at each step-up date. If the new higher coupon rate is greater than what the market yield would be at the call price, the firm will call the bonds and retire them. This means if market yields rise, a bondholder may in turn get a higher coupon rate because the bonds are less likely to be called on the step-up date. Yields could increase because an issuer's credit rating has fallen, in which case the higher step-up coupon rate simply compensates investors for a greater credit risk. Aside from this, we can view step-up coupon bonds as having some protection against increases in market interest rates to the extent they are offset by increases in bond coupon rates. A credit-linked coupon bond carries a provision stating that the coupon rate will go up by a certain amount if the credit rating of the issuer falls and go down if the credit rating of the issuer improves. While this offers some protection against a credit downgrade of the issuer, the higher required coupon payments may make the financial situation of the issuer worse and possibly increase the probability of default. A payment-in-kind bond allows the issuer to make the coupon payments by increasing the principal amount of the outstanding bonds, essentially paying bond interest with more bonds. Firms that issue payment-in-kind bonds typically do so because they anticipate that firm cash flows may be less than required to service the debt, often because of high levels of debt financing or leverage. These bonds typically have higher yields because of a lower perceived credit quality from cash flow shortfalls, or simply because of the high leverage of the issuing firm. With a deferred coupon bond, also called a split coupon bond, regular coupon payments do not begin until a period of time after issuance. These are issued by firms that anticipate cash flows will increase in the future to allow them to make coupon interest payments. Deferred coupon bonds may be appropriate financing for a firm financing a large project that will not be completed and generating revenue for some period of time after bond issuance. Deferred coupon bonds may offer bondholders tax advantages in some jurisdictions. Zero coupon bonds can be considered a type of deferred coupon bond. An index-linked bond has coupon payments and/or a principal value that is based on a commodity index, an equity index, or some other published index number. Inflation-linked bonds, also called linkers, are the most common type of index-linked bonds. Their payments are based on the change in an inflation index, such as the Consumer Price Index in the United States. Indexed bonds that will not pay less than their original par value at maturity, even when the index has decreased, are termed principal-protected bonds. The different structures of inflation-indexed bonds include indexed annuity bonds, fully amortizing bonds with the periodic payments directly adjusted for inflation or deflation. Indexed zero coupon bonds. The payment at maturity is adjusted for inflation. Interest indexed bonds. The coupon rate is adjusted for inflation while the principal value remains unchanged. Capital indexed bonds. This is the most common structure. An example is U.S. Treasury Inflation Protected Securities, or TIPS. The coupon rate remains constant, and the principal value of the bonds is increased by the rate of inflation or decreased by deflation. To better understand the structure of capital-indexed bonds, consider a bond with a par value of $1,000 at issuance, a 3% annual coupon rate paid semi-annually, and a provision that the principal value will be adjusted for inflation or deflation. If, 6 months after issuance, the reported inflation has been 1% over the period, the principal value of the bonds is increased by 1% from $1,000 to $1,010, and the six-month coupon of 1.5% is calculated as 1.5% of the adjusted principal value. With this structure, we can view the coupon rate of 3% as a real rate of interest. Unexpected inflation will not decrease the purchasing power of the coupon interest payments, and the principal value paid at maturity will have approximately the same purchasing power as the $1,000 par value did at bond issuance.